look with me in your Bibles in Revelation chapter 8. Last time we spent pretty much the entire message on verse 1, by way of introduction. What I want to do is kind of advance a little bit as the Lord directs down to verse 5 today. Let's begin reading in verse 1, Revelation chapter 8. And when he had opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven about the space of half an hour. That's where we spent our time last time, considering when heaven is silent, and seeing that nothing happens or moves but what God ordains it. This whole world, the whole universe is directed. We always like something happening, don't we? But there's times of silence. We saw that even in our own lives. It's important to shut them out, to wait on the Lord. Now in verse 2, I saw the seven angels which stood before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. See that the opening of the seventh seal is linked to the giving of seven trumpets. Again, remember, this is not chronological. It's not first this finishes and then this. What it is, it's a going back. What was represented under the seven seals, now the Spirit of God is going to direct us back and show us the same thing, a little fuller revelation, but under the image of trumpets. As you read Revelation, it goes in cycles. It's cyclical. It's just going back and take you through. After the trumpets, it's going to show you vials. That's just the way the scriptures present. Okay? And that's why we need to be taught it. You teach, and you tell them what you're going to teach them, and you teach them, and you tell them what you told them, and then you start back over again, tell them what you're going to teach them. So we read the word that way. Verse 3, another angel came and stood at the altar, having a golden censer. And there was given unto him much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all saints upon the golden altar, which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. The angel took the censer, and filled it with fire of the altar, and cast it into the earth. And there were voices, and thunderings, and lightnings, and an earthquake. Then we read the transition. And the seven angels, which had the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. So next time we'll look at that, the sounding of those trumpets. But today I want us to just focus in here on these verses 2 through 5. I want to speak to you about the prayers of God's saints. The prayers of God's saints. Now, in this matter, before we get to that, we see here, as we saw last time, the seventh seal being opened, and there was silence in heaven for about the space of half an hour. You know, in time of warfare, there's a war in heaven. There's a war from heaven. God exercising and executing his purposes as the commander in chief upon this earth up until Christ should come. It's described here in verse 5 as thunderings and lightnings and earthquakes. That could really symbolize anything that comes in and disrupts man's plans and buildings and thoughts, and what he plans to do. Now, some people get upset. They say, why can't God just leave me alone and let me build? You don't want that. You don't want that. And that's why these seven seals are going to be represented now in the same form now as trumpets, because trumpets are warnings, aren't they? When trumpets sound, something's about to happen. But in time of warfare, when there's silence, it can mean one of two things. It can mean either that the enemy has retreated in defeat or is preparing the next onslaught. Now, when we think of God's sovereign purposes, we know that there's no retreat or defeat. Some men think that way. You know, this half hour that's represented here is even prophetic. In time, prophetic time, you see terms like 3 days or 3 years, but those are all prophetic. Those are just talking about periods of time, limited periods of time that God has ordained. So a half hour amongst 3 days, you know, might not seem that long, but still, it's ordained of God. And there are times when God is silent. Sometimes we would like to see Him act when He doesn't. Does that get you upset? You're thinking, boy, if that's there every time that God should just send out lightning right now to strike this, turn this situation upside down. But He's not in our beck and call. This is all according to His sovereign will and purpose. It's not men directed these things. And some take those times of silence. Stop and think about this. It's affecting you one way, but to those that the Lord is leaving to themselves, they take that time of silence as a way of building up their courage all the more and going out all the more in what they're doing. Didn't Pharaoh do that? As soon as the plague was removed, there's a time of silence. What happened? His heart was hardened. But the Lord does that to make manifest what's really in men's hearts. So, let's don't be despondent during these times of silence. As I said, some would wish that God would leave them alone. But they do so ignorantly, don't they? You know, if God leaves you alone, even if this half an hour is for your lifetime, gives you the desires of your heart, then He's silent. He's not acting. He's turned you loose. He never takes His hand out. We live and move and have our being, but in the sense of ever drawing your heart to grace, He's given you everything you've ever wanted. A nice home, good job, lots of friends, family, just party every weekend, just on and on. And you rejoice in that. You think, I'm not having the troubles that others are. I'm thankful. I'm living my life. Live and let live. But sooner or later, they're going to have to face the moment when that God will no longer be silent. And will act in all of His justice. Silence, dear friends, for us, the Lord's people, is always a time for reflection and seeking the Lord. When He's silent, when heaven's silent, it's not a time of giving up in prayer, but it's always a time of drawing to the Lord in prayer. That's what I want you to see taking place here. Here's this silence in heaven. What's going on in the interval? We find the saints praying. We find the Lord's people seeking. We're talking about a persecuted church here. This, as it pertains to these for whom John was writing in the first century. Maybe there was a lull in this persecution. Maybe there was something that was different. They weren't sure. But one thing they could be sure of, it was all coming from God's hand. So they saw Him. They sought the Lord. And here we see, that's what we see in verses 3 and 4. But first we see a trumpet given to each of the seven angels. So there's not inactivity. That's what I want you to see. There's silence, but there's not inactivity. God is always at work in everything that takes place, even though we may not see it and we may not know it. He's given these seven trumpets, now these seven angels. And this is all taking place in heaven. Now, these angels are God's ministers who exercise His will in one of two ways. And you can see this in reading through the scriptures yourself. Could God act directly without working through angels? Absolutely. Just like He could do anything. But He's a God of means. So, just like this word, how is it that we know of Christ? It's when the Spirit of God takes this word and opens an otherwise dead heart to see Christ.
He's purposed that it be done through the Word, the revealed Word, the written Word, you see. Some people say, well, couldn't he just go and speak to David or speak to Elizabeth and reveal Christ? No, he could. But he didn't. He didn't purpose it that way. This is his Word. That's why we open this Word. Even in the reading of it. Our times of gathering are full of the reading of the Word. Why? Because that's what God honors. It's not entertainment. We don't try to fill it with special music. It's the reading of the Word. That's why we're silent as we sit and listen to these men come read and comment, point us to the Word. We need that. But God so uses angels. Ministering spirits is what the Scriptures call them. And they work in one of two ways. First of all, he uses them in the providence and the government of his world. How he does, I don't know. You know, someone says, should we look for an angel behind every rock? How many angels are there? Well, just as many as God has created, and he uses every one of them to his glory. When he says, stand at attention, they're at attention. When he says, go, they go. They are constantly at his command. I think it's wrong to try to get into the mystery of it, try to figure it out. We're to be looking to Christ, but nonetheless, the Scriptures are plain that he uses these ministering spirits for his glory and for his providence. If you look over in Psalm 104, and the word angel simply means a messenger. It's one sent to accomplish the purpose of the king, right? So they're ministering spirits. Now, they're not infinite in wisdom. They're finite. Even Peter wrote about them looking into the things that pertain to the church and how God is working in the salvation of sinners. This thing was unfolded before their eyes. They didn't have prior understanding knowledge. I don't believe that they even know the names of the elect beforehand. Why? Because the Scripture says there's rejoicing in heaven over one sinner that repents. And the sense there is like you with hearing good news, just wow, rejoice. It's revealed to them. God, there's certain things God has not revealed even to these angels, but they still stand ready. In our fallen state, we struggle with that, don't we? We want to know. But then when we get some foreknowledge, then we don't know what to do with it anyway. We sit there and fret. You know, that's our fallen nature. But these angels don't know. When God says go, it's revealed to them what their mission is. It's a lot like soldiers in a warfare. They might be headed somewhere they haven't been told. They just know that they're supposed to be at a certain place, a certain time, and be ready to go. And here in the Psalm 104 and verse 4. This is how it's described in this language. Who maketh his angels spirits, his ministers of flaming fire. That's used in the sense of judgment. That's used in the sense of bringing God's judgments upon this world. He has every right to do it. Turning the nation upside down, causing warfare, famine, persecution, all of these things. They're brought by the hands of these ministering spirits. You know, this is an important thing to point out to people sometimes, because don't most people think that whenever there's a calamity, there's an evil spirit behind it? Religionists teach that. You know, if someone's going through deep trouble, that they've got a spirit for everything, an evil spirit for everything. There's a spirit of gluttony. There's a spirit of covetousness. And these preachers love it. They love to go in and be the little priest, go out and sanctify houses and homes and families and marriages and cast out demons. Everything is related somehow to an evil spirit. Not in God's world. We know that nothing can move but what God ordains. And even if it is an evil spirit, it says that an evil spirit came upon Saul. You read another portion, it says the Lord sent it. The Lord sent it. He's the master. He's the sovereign. But here, we see that it's not evil spirits that are at the basis of everything that's taking place, even with regard to the church and the persecutions against it. It's God's ministering spirits bringing these to pass. The trumpets are put into their hands to sound the warnings. And as we see, when they sound them, there's something that is directly taking place on the earth as a result. It's all according to plan. God's plan, God's purpose. That should be of some help to us. It is to me. You know, you get one of those days where your head's spun around so many times on your shoulders, and then you don't know where it's going to stop, forward or backward. You're just reeling by the end of the day. Nothing goes like you planned. But stop and think, even that God has ordained for your good and for His glory. It's like those little that little bat game. You put your head down, you spin around seven times and try to walk. That's the Lord even doing the spin. Why? He's going to keep us dependent upon Him. He's going to shake our foundation. He's going to shake that. He's going to break those boards. He's going to blast them to His glory and honor. If you look at Isaiah chapter 45, verse 7, you say, well, why is this so vital? Why this detail? Well, if you think about this church, we're not even 30 years removed from the time that Christ came, lived, died, and rose again. And you would think people look around for a kingdom on earth, and all they see is the hand of these Jews increasing against them. All they see is the Roman Empire gaining in strength against them. Living in catacombs. Go back and read the stories of the catacombs of those that identified with Christ back in the first century. They lost everything. They were living in tombs, under the ground, in damp situations. And you know, if they'd have been left to themselves, they'd have been wondering, what on earth have we gotten ourselves into? And yet, the book of Revelation is purposed to show them that not even that situation, having lost everything, for Christ's sake, is outside of God's sovereign hand. All right? Here in Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 7, this is the word of the Lord. He said, I form the light and create darkness. You think, boy, it's a nice bright day today. Well, the Lord formed that. You say, boy, it's a cloudy day today. I don't know. I can hardly lift my head. The Lord formed that. The Lord did that. He said, I make peace. That's what if we had to schedule our day, that's the way it would be every day. I'm going to schedule peace today. Let's put peace on the calendar. Well, it's the Lord that schedules your calendar, not you. And the sooner we learn that, the more peaceful our lives will be, even in turmoil. Let's just don't get scheduling too far ahead here. I'm a scheduler. I like to have a week plan. I've got a daily list. But you know what? The Lord's teaching me to rip that list up if I have to. Just tear it up, throw it in the can. Tomorrow's another day. The Lord has purposed it to be so. You see, I make peace, but He says, I create evil. Now, what's He talking about? He's talking about calamity. That's that word. He's talking about disruptions in our lives. We know that no evil can befall any of the Lord, but it's talking about what we just read here. These times when nothing but thunderings and lightnings and earthquake, they're shaking our world. Who creates that? The Lord does. Isn't that what your Bible says? Unless someone's taking it out. I, the Lord, do all these things. Do all these things. Well, angels are used to that end. But also, this should be of some comfort to us. Angels are also sent with a particular mission to aid and protect God's elect. They're in their dealings in the world, but their specific mission is according to God's redemptive purpose. They are now ministering spirits to the people of God. If you look over in Hebrews chapter 1, take a look at it with me. And again, I don't know how this all works out. Sometimes when the Lord has brought you through a situation and protected you in it, my thoughts aren't thinking, well, my guardian angel. You know, people like to play with this thing where a guardian angel, and some of these advertisements make them look so stupid anyway, trying to keep up with somebody that's a little bit wild on the wild side, you know, and the guardian angel comes out a little bit tarnished. You know, it's like anything. Put it in man's hands and he's going to make a mess of it, but you know, I know all these things are directed to the Lord. Yet the scriptures say that He does give his angels charge over us to keep us. And you see, we're not to worship them, though. Our focus of attention is not to be on them. People back in the early church evidently began to give some importance to them. When this teaching started going around, it's like anything. They're focused off of Christ now and on the means. We could do that with anything. You could do it with the Spirit. You could do it with the Bible. You could give something of more importance than Christ. And in so doing, you've made an idol. And we dare not do it. But here it says in verse 13, to show the difference between angels and the Son of God, who's sitting on the throne. It's the Son of God, not the angels. It says, to which of the angels said he at any time, no matter how powerful they may be, sit on my right hand until I make thine enemies thy footstool. That was only stated to one person. That's Christ. To him be all the glory. Are they not all, and the key word there is ministry spirit, they're servants. They serve Christ even as we serve Christ. Sent forth to minister to them who shall be heirs of salvation. All right? So, coming back here to Revelation 8, we see these angels standing at the ready now with these trumpets given them. They didn't go take them. They were given. Now, verse 3, another angel came. Another messenger. See him coming. And standing, it says, at the altar. In the original, it's actually over the altar. All right? You know that in the Old Testament, the mercy seat had those two cherubim in gold facing one another. That was a type of the presence of God. And so here we see this other angel coming and standing over the altar and having a golden censer. Now remember, this is symbolic language that we're reading here. This is not taking place on earth. This is taking place in heaven. The scene is in heaven and therefore has reference to the very presence of God, of which the earthly tabernacle and temple were but types. Okay? If you look over in Hebrews chapter 8, think about what time this is being written. Well, this is after Christ had already died, risen, ascended on high. The veil had been rent in twain. There was no more importance to that earthly temple or tabernacle. Even though the Jews continued to put emphasis upon it. In fact, I believe that a lot of this pouring out of God's wrath was because they continued to try to hold on to that earthly temple that God had already declared null and void. Why? Because Christ had fulfilled every type and shadow. You see? But they continue to hold to it. And it's during this time that we're reading here in Revelation that God did come and just completely destroyed Titus, one of the Roman emperors. And it was gone. You see? But there is what that temple signified in heaven that's forever. It's not a literal altar up there floating around in space like a spaceship. It's not a literal mercy seat, but it's the person of Christ. That's who this is about. All of these were types of him. Here in Hebrews chapter 8, you see it says, of those things that were according to the law, Hebrews 8:5, who served under the example and shadow of heavenly things. As Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle, for see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern showed to thee in the mount. Right? So, what we're seeing here is, again, symbolic language. But the angel is standing over this golden altar of incense. Remember in the old temple, there was a courtyard, and then there was the holy place. And in that holy place, there was the table of showbread. There was a candlestick. And then right up next to the veil that separated between the holy place and the most holy place, there was an altar of incense. Out in the courtyard was the altar of burnt offering with a laver that had the water. But next in this holy place was this altar of incense. And that incense burned night and day. It's like walking into a house and someone's been burning incense. There's a fragrance throughout. Okay, it covers everything. That's what this altar of incense was designed to do. Again, a picture of Christ. The altar of incense, that incense. Ephesians talks about his death being a sweet-smelling savor unto God. And don't you know, when those high priests went in, those priests went in and out, when they came out smelling. Just like that incense. That's how you could tell they'd been in the presence of the Lord. Right? What's that a type of? Christ. Without him, we dare not go in without that sweet-smelling savor already having been put to our account. So we see that here. The altar of incense is typical of the intercession of the Lord Jesus Christ for his people. But you say, well, here though, in verse 3, it talks about the prayers of all the saints upon that golden altar, which was before the throne. So, which is it? Is it Christ? Or is it the prayers of his people? Both. Both. You say, well, can both meanings be true? Absolutely. Christ is the representative of his people. They're one. He's one with his blood shed and righteousness imputed. That is their intercession before God. Don't think that God's hearing you. He's hearing his Son. He's answering because of his Son. Let's don't ever forget that. There's never a time when we could ever think, okay, you know, I've been redeemed, I've been regenerated, and so now I can come before God without the need of Christ's intercession. No. That whole altar, that incense offered, represents the intercession of Christ, but it also represents the intercession of his people in him. Because what Christ asks for, he asks on behalf of his people. You see. If you look over in Romans chapter 5, let me just show this to you. Romans chapter 5. It says in verse 9, much more than being now justified by his blood. That's what gives us righteous standing before God, is being justified by his death. That's what his blood means, his death. That's when we were justified before God, when he died. But we shall be saved from wrath through him. You say, weren't we saved then? Yes, but we shall be kept in that state of salvation. How? Through him. Through his very presence and glory. It's not him coming, living, dying, rising again, saying on high, and saying now you're on your own. No. We're saved from wrath through him. Kept saved from wrath through him. Why? Because when he died, he bore it all away. That's a glorious thing. That means there's nothing I can do that's ever going to bring me again into condemnation under his wrath. It's Christ bore it. Christ bore it. It says, for if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God, how? By the death of his Son. It's not talking here about regeneration. It's talking about that reconciliation between God and his elect that had to be answered by a substitute. It was answered by Christ, by the death of the Son. Much more being reconciled. That matter was settled there at the cross. We shall be saved. How? By his life. We'll be kept saved by his life. Continually kept in that state of reconciliation. Now, we fall in and out with people all the time. We say, boy, today we can be reconciled with them, tomorrow, not. But with God, that's not the way it is. Once his Son shed his blood, there was an absolute satisfaction of his law and justice that not even God in all of his holiness could find one thing to look at upon anyone that Christ has redeemed and say, I'm no longer reconciled to you. It was done before I ever knew. I'm thankful it is. If it was up to me, well, I'd be having a fight every day. He'd have to cast me into hell. And there's times, quite honestly, I wondered why he had. But I know why he had. There's been bloodshed that has established that relationship once for all. That's the basis of this intercession. You come over to Hebrews chapter 7. Look in Hebrews chapter 7. And verse 25. It says, wherefore he is able to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him, seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for them. Now, that's not him up there in every case just, you know, busy trying to, okay, here's one I got to make intercession for. Now, here's one I got to make intercession for. No. His very presence and glory. The fact that he is there is the intercession for him. He's the go-between. He stands there, having borne God's wrath. And God justly continues to show mercy to every one of his own for whom Christ died. It's not conditioned on us, God's mercy. I'm thankful it's not. It's not conditioned on how what I do or what I don't do. It's conditioned on what Christ has done. And he ever lives to make intercession for us. If you come back here to Revelation chapter 8, I believe that there's something that's important to bring out here in this translation. It might not be all that clear. Because here in verse 3, it says that he should offer, and then you see it, italic. Actually, with is not even in the original. They furnish these trying to tie this together. It says that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar. All right, so you get the impression just from reading that that there's Christ's intercession that he's offering along with the prayers of the saints. But that's not what it's saying. Let me tell you, see if I can translate this how it should be. It says, in order that he should, that word in the original is give. It's not offer, just as an offering. There's only been one offering. But that he should give it for the prayers of all the saints upon the altar. That makes a difference, doesn't it? Not with them, but for them. That means that as they pray, it's still his giving that God hears. It's his presence. It's his intercession. It's his blood and righteousness that gives us that standing before God. Not with, but for the prayers. He gives it on behalf of, he intercedes on behalf of his saints. Now, here we see these saints in persecution and tribulation, they're praying. But clearly, here's a point to bring out. If people like to boast of their prayer life, don't they? Well, this will put the whammy to it. Because this indicates my prayer life, even in its best state, is imperfect. There's no perfection in my praying. Not even during a time of persecution. Sometimes we think, you know, it is, but no, it's not. It needs to be incense, perfumed with the intercession of Christ. Once these prayers have been so fragranced, you can look over there in Ephesians 5:2, the smoke of them rises to the very presence of God. But it's only through the intercession of Christ. All right? But here's something to close with. The Lord upon his throne does see the size and sufferings of his redeemer. Sometimes we may wonder if he doesn't. He does. If you're the Lord, you've been the apple of his eye from eternity. From eternity. And you were on his mind when Christ laid down his life. In fact, that's all he had on his mind and heart was the names of those that were on that breastplate as the high priest. That's who he interceded for. I didn't know him then, but I was on his mind. I was in him when he died and rose again. How on earth, then, am I going to escape his attention now? Sometimes we get reasoning like, you know, just because I can't see my daddy, like a little kid, you think that, you know, he's gone somewhere. He's not. He's never taken his eye off of you. Never has. He hears the requests, thanksgiving of his children, even in the midst of their tribulation. Don't think even in tribulation that you're abandoned. You're not. He's ordained it all for our good and his glory. But we're going to see this next time, the judgments upon the earth. Because you notice, after these prayers have been offered, and these were sincere cries of the church during this time, going up before the Lord, in this silence, we see in verse 4, the smoke of the incense which came with the prayers of the saints, or for the prayers of the saints. Again, is the way that should be understood. Ascended up before God out of the angel's hand, and the angel took the censer, filled it with fire of the altar, and did what? Cast it into the earth. This is a great mystery. And again, I don't think we can understand it. I've read books on the mystery of providence. I've seen men try to go and describe and define exactly how God works. You can't do it. If you've got it down to the science, you've got the wrong science. Because this is God's doing. Nonetheless, we see the angel in accord with the God's sovereign purpose, taking that censer filled with the fire of the altar and casting it on the earth. He'll do his will in his time. And what an encouragement to pray. What an encouragement to seek the Lord at all times. Even before the angels sound their trumpets and bring on these wars and desolations that we're going to be looking at again. Christ is represented as interceding for them and presenting their prayers before the Father. But he doing it on their behalf. See? So let's remember that the way it comes first through the hand of the mediator. That's a comfort. All right.